This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, Jeremy Warner, Illini Inquirer publisher here. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Thousands of you every episode. It's been awesome. We appreciate the support. Whether you just listen to the podcast, you check out just the free articles online that we provide, but we really appreciate our VIP members, the thousands of you that pay and to support this website and to pay and support our venture of trying to give you the best, most in-depth, balanced Illini coverage there is out there. And right now, if you have not been a VIP member, now's a great chance to do it. 60% off of VIP membership, 24/7 Sports is running right now. That's 60% off your first year of annual VIP membership. That's more than $70 of savings. Listen, you got a first place Big Ten basketball team right now. The football staff is putting in a ton of work on the road recruiting to turn over this roster and improve Illinois football into something much better than it has been. And we are covering it all. You can see it on the site every day, 5, 6, 7 stories, half of them VIP, to give you as much insight into your favorite teams as possible. So if you haven't signed up for a membership now, great chance to do it. More than $70 of savings, 60% off an entire year. Check us out at IlliniInquirer.com. Now, your podcast. Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. Jeremy Warner, Illini Inquirer publisher, here with you. And I have some football thoughts percolating through my mind, but I gotta write them out. I gotta figure out like exactly what I'm thinking, because Illinois football recruiting has been interesting here recently. So a lot of late offers to the class of 2022, blue shirts being thrown around, the transfer market maybe a little picky on the transfer market. I just have some football thoughts percolating in my mind, and that'll lead up to signing day, which is next Wednesday. Illinois has announced Tommy DeVito, the Syracuse transfer quarterback. They have announced Tira Edwards, the defensive line transfer from Northwestern. So two additions they've made there. Still waiting to hear on Zylan Chrysler. Seems like he will be here very shortly, the JUCO transfer as well. But so they are adding to this roster to help 2022, and I'm sure they will add more transfers. I'm certain of that, especially on the offensive line. I would expect a defensive player or so. But I kind of want to see how this plays out. I kind of want to put some research into some of my thoughts and kind of, you know, formulate exactly. But just some interesting things on the recruiting trail for them. Not bad. It's just been interesting. This staff can really, they got a lot of relationships. But they really dive in and find some interesting, intriguing sleepers. And I'm interested to dive into more of that. I'm interested to talk to Brett Bielema as much as we can about some of that. But with blue shirts, might not be able to hear much from him on that. So just wanted to let you know, there was a football podcast coming up. Probably get Ryan Easterling and Joey Wagner on, or at least one of those guys to discuss it with them. But today, we're talking hoops. You see the title of the podcast. Michael Tuip is going to talk about the big win over Michigan State that keeps Illinois atop the Big Ten standings. Wisconsin is now tied with them. We recorded this before Wisconsin beat Nebraska, but we did have a discussion about Wisconsin and their schedule that is probably one of the biggest fears. I mean, Wisconsin at this point, you know, they're a 2 seed in most bracketologies, and they deserve it. So any, you know, Johnny Davis deservedly National Player of the Year, but any doubts about them, I think we should throw to the wayside, at least when it comes to Big Ten title contention. And their schedule only lends credibility to the possibility of them winning a Big Ten title. So we talk about that with Michael too, but most importantly, we talk about how Illinois won this game. We talked for about 10 minutes about one player, And I'm sure you know who that is coming after this game. But Mike really wanted to dive into that. And we talked about some of the issues in closing out that game as well. But I will not bore you anymore. Coming up next, in-depth breakdown from former Illini and Wright State basketball player Michael Tuip, our Illini Inquirer basketball analyst. That's next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's our weekly chat with Mike Letsua here on the Illini Inquirer podcast, and we have a huge win, Mike. No one really, I mean, I wasn't. Vegas was. The odds makers certainly were giving Illinois a chance. But once we heard Kofi Coburn and Andre Curbelo were out, I thought it was a tough matchup with Michigan State, especially with their size throughout the court. But, man, Illinois comes out, puts on a defensive clinic for the first half. Second half just held on for dear life, right? And you find a way to win that game, probably fortunate towards the end of that, but you don't apologize for it. But what a win, Mike. And Brad Underwood said culture win. What does that mean to you? What does culture win mean to you, if anything?
Well, he's exactly right. And I think over the years, when you build this thing, when you build a culture, these type of wins, the really ugly ones, the ones where you think to yourself, are we – like the basketball gods going to let us win this one, yeah. You know, and those end up being the ones that you squeak out. I don't know. There's something about having a bad culture and not squeaking out those. Like, it just doesn't work like that. You know, you just, and I'm not saying, that's almost like saying Michigan State has a bad culture and that's why they didn't sneak out this game.
Or like,
you get what I mean.
Or like Northwestern that has lost like every painfully close game. Like, I don't know if they have a bad culture. It's just, they don't find a way to win those games.
Yeah, and I think this team has found a way time and time again to make the most of their situation. And at some point, you know, the musical chair stuff kind of feels normal, where this guy's out, or that, this guy's an illness, or this guy's. But I will say, Kofi Coburn out, Andre Curbelo out, you still got Trent Frazier. And I think it's really getting to the point now where, and maybe this is, I don't know, maybe this is an over-exaggeration, I don't know, but if you told me that there was no Kofi Coburn, right, and these are all separate, no Kofi Coburn or no Andre Curbelo or no Trent Frazier, I think the one that hurts you the most is no Trent Frazier. I really do. I think we've talked about it before, where when you have guys that do different things on the basketball court, some handle the scoring load, some handle the ball handling, the playmaking, and then some handle the defensive assignment of the other team's best player. And rarely does anybody do all three, but he does. And he does that for this team. And it's part of the reason why I think Dylan Burkhardt had posed the question earlier today, like, who is the best, like right now, who is the best point guard in the Big Ten? And you kind of go through and, all right, that guy, this guy. And
it's
you
not
keep kind of coming back.
It's not a strong point guard league, right? Like it's
really
right. Not.
It's not. And it's like you look and you're like, man, this is – Trent Frazier's really making a case for – you know, to for sure all league, but the way that he's stepped in, and we'll go through the film and stuff, just some of the timely defensive plays. And you know, I get he didn't shoot it particularly well from the field, but you know, a lot of them were kind of late shot clock heaves. But he's done such a tremendous job being that calming influence and being that stabilizing force for this team, where when you have Coburn out, when you have Curbelo out, if you still have that guy, you got a chance.
It does feel fitting, Mike, that he returns for the super senior season and is getting his due. Like, I don't think anybody's underrating Trent Frazier at this point. Like, maybe we'll find that out at the end of the year. But I mean, locally, no one is, right? Like, I think he's no doubt an all Big Ten guy this year. I think he has a real good case for Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. And you just mentioned it, like the load he's carrying to play 36 to 40 minutes. Like he had that weird foul where I think he just lost like what was going on, like how many fouls they had, but he was gassed. Yet you wouldn't even notice it the way he played, handling the ball, being the only point guard on the team. That's where they miss Kerbel, right? It's just to take that load off him for a little bit, but he did it well. Like I texted you, I love the way Trent Frazier is running the show right now. And it's not even scoring sometimes. It's just making smart decisions and defensively, to shut down Max Christie, like the one guy on Michigan State that you feel like can go off. Like Gabe Brown can, and Damonte Williams gets credit for that too. But to do all of that, it's insane value. And I would say probably Kofi, I'd still want on the floor, but I need at least one of Kerbel and Frazier. And Frazier is ridiculous right now. And you know, we can get to the conversations of should he have his jersey in the Raptors. I don't know, but like he doesn't fit the certain criteria. But I think everyone knows how valuable he's been for the last, especially the 3 years of winning.
Well, I think back to his freshman year, we've talked about this before, the maturation process, right? I'm a scorer, and now we bring in Io, we bring in some of these guys. I have to guard, right? Somebody has to guard, and I'm going to be that guy. And then now this second maturation of really going from off-ball to distributor playmaker in these big moments, especially when you have a guy like Andre Kerbel go down, and he's just really proven time and time again how indispensable he is in just in a lot of different ways. And the Raptors thing, we had a podcast earlier in the year where I was like, doesn't it feel like he should, his jersey should go up there? Yeah. And
I mean, I'm a big Raptors guy. Like I would have, like if my Bulls, I would have like, I'm kind of a small Hall of Fame guy. But I'm a big Raptors, like, you know, your Hall of Fame, like the Illinois Hall of Fame, big. Why not? So I would have probably Trent Frazier up there because I would have Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose in my Bulls Raptors, right? Because I just – those were the most beloved players of a generation there. So, sure, put Trent Frazier up there right next to Kofi and Iowa for all I care.
Yeah, I don't think it's – honestly, I don't think it's crazy. And when you look at – every game, every season, he's improved, and he's shown something different every season. He's shown that he is flexible in, hey, I can let somebody else be the guy, right? Or when it's my turn to be the guy, I can be that guy. And you just don't have many players like that in the country, and who can do all those things, and who you can truly tell their impact and their presence has, you know, a direct correlation to what this team looks like when they're on the floor. And I know the Maryland game just kind of was a little bit more of an aberration, but yeah, man. I mean, he really has found a way to, even just in this game, right? He was 2 for 10 from three, and but some of the charges he slid over and took, I'll show you some of the transition defense stuff in the film. It's gross, man. Like it's so good, and it's. And you're really thankful watching it because you sit and say, man, there are guys that are on this team that get to learn from him.
Yeah.
Right? That's invaluable. And that's culture. And that's how you sustain winning. And it's with a guy like Io DeSumo, and it's with a guy like Trent Frazier.
Yeah, so the criteria for honored jerseys, National Player of the Year, enshrined in the National Basketball Hall of Fame, U.S. Olympian, Big Ten Player of the Year, consensus first or second team. That's why Kofi will definitely be in there. Illinois All-Century Team member, an individual whose pioneering efforts made a significant impact on Illinois and international basketball. You can have that last one. You could put up anybody you want, basically. So maybe Trent gets in there for that. I wonder if at some point they just go, hey, if you finish your career as a top 10 scorer, we'll put you in. Because then they could put Kawan Garris, who's the other like huge one that people bring up, and Trent Frazier right in there after he passed up Mark Smith and Brandon Paul last game.
Yeah, I get he's played 5 years, but you still got to put the ball in the basket, right? And he's done it in a lot of different ways. And yeah, no, I think that last part of that criteria is pretty spot on for what he's meant to this program, right?
Thank you, John Gross. He finally landed that point guard. He just wasn't able to coach him that entire time.
I'll even take it back with Trent. I remember his recruiting visit. I was actually I was coming back from Wright State. I had just finished my summer first summer at Wright State, but I came back to campus and it happened to be Trent's recruiting visit. So Trent was like riding in the passenger seat of my car. I wasn't even on the team anymore. And just kind of, I don't know, we went over to Firehouse and, you know, D met up with us and, you know, you could tell like he was just, this was just the place for him. You could tell he felt at home and, you know, he and D had a really good conversation and, you know, the staff did a really good job. And, but even I think the one thing that goes a little bit, I guess, not talked about as much, you know how many kids have gone in the transfer portal over the last few years? Seriously. I mean, and he as a guy that scored, he's like a prime candidate, like a freshman that scores 13 a game on a losing team that probably wants to go somewhere else, would have had teams lining up to go after him if he did decide to go into the portal, and he didn't, and he stuck it out. And you're a big part of turning this team into a one seed. You're a big part of turning this team into a Big Ten tournament champion and, you know, first place in the Big Ten right now. And I think that should not go, I guess, not talked about.
It's a great point.
You know, it says a lot about him.
Yeah, it's a great point, Mike. And you think of, like, he could have been Alonzo Verge. Just chase those buckets, right? Like, chase wherever you're going to be the guy who gets 15 shots, 20 yeah. shots a game. Man, when Io came in, you had that weird time where they're trying to figure out their role, but they both bought into it, right? And then Andre Curbelo comes in, and Trent just decides to become the best player he can, and that's on the defensive end. Ton of credit to him, because not a lot of guys do that. And I think probably from that time, 17- or 18-year-old Trent Frazier was on campus to now, like, one of the funnest parts of my job is watching the maturation of these guys. And the maturation of Trent Frazier has been just a joy to watch.
His development, right? Like, you know, we talk about the player that he's turned into, and that's what you want to see. And through 5 years of college basketball, and I think it's a reference point for this staff. Yeah. When you bring in a scoring guard that may be a little bit undersized, hey, this is what we can help turn you into. And a lot of that is the kid, but a lot of that is the coaching staff and the situation and allowing for development. I think that's something that you know, that flies a little bit under the radar is coaches allowing their guys to develop and not putting them in the box or not putting them on, hey, you know, you're not as great with the ball, so we're going to put you on a dribble limit, or we're going to do that. Like, you know, Brad Underwood and that staff has done such a good job of just letting these guys play. You may make mistakes in the beginning, and that's great. I think every mistake that you make is bringing you closer to figuring out who you are as a player, and Trent certainly figured that out here in his fifth year.
All right, so he was part of this. First half, Mike, I said defensive clinic. You're going to have a film breakdown, but mm-hmm. this is the opposite of what happened against Maryland. I mean, even against Trent, like Ayala is getting penetration. Fats Russell is getting penetration. It didn't continue in the second half. Michigan State kind of got theirs, but what happened in that first half where Illinois was able to shut them down?
Yeah, I think the contrast between Maryland and Michigan State, Maryland, and a lot of it's going to come back to transition defense. Transition defense is difficult for any team. It's especially difficult for an offensive rebounding team. And you can look at the numbers, right? You know, I think they're giving up over 1 point per possession in transition, which isn't crazy, but it's, I think it ranks in the 28th percentile in college basketball right now, this Illinois team does. But the part of that's by design. I mean, you can't get all the offensive rebounds you get without sending guys to the glass, but if you don't get it, now that's 3-4 guys that are behind the play. So that's the give and take, and that's the balance that you try to find. Against Maryland, you know, I thought the problem was you let some good players feel good early, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Ayala had a really tough shot to start that game on Trent. It was like an 18-footer contested two falling over, whatever. But they got out in transition. Fats Russell gets out in transition. They don't get matched up. He sees a few go through. Alfonso Plummer starts getting screened a little bit, and it was on at that point. And all bets are off when you have good players feeling good at home. Against Michigan State, it was a little bit different. I thought, you know, there were some transition defense mistakes in the first half. They got out, and Gabe Brown did what Gabe Brown does and sprinted the floor and got some dunks, got some fouls. But for the most part, they were able to keep the floor, you know, keep that half court congested for Michigan State. And we'll show it in the breakdown, they just didn't do that against Maryland. I mean, it felt like there was, if you look at the Maryland game and then you look at the Michigan State game, it looks like they're playing on two different basketball courts. It looked like one was 80 feet wide and it looked like the other one was 40 feet wide, right? So, or 50 feet wide, whatever it is. And that ended up being the difference. There weren't many avenues for this Michigan State team to drive. And then, you know, when they don't have that, they have to rely on making oftentimes contested three-point shots. And it's the reason why, you know, at one point they were 1-for-10 or whatever they were. And that's a big reason for that. Illinois does such a good job of guarding the three because they do a good job of guarding the ball. And when you don't guard the ball, that's when you're in rotation. That's when guys are getting head full steam downhill. And that ended up being the story against Maryland, but against Michigan State, especially down the stretch, you know, I thought their switches, their rotations were so much more crisp. They were so much more dialed in on that end, and that it really ended up being the difference.
Mike, I want to ask you this question. Like, Illinois right now through conference play, and we got a big sample size here now, 9 games, has allowed the fewest percentage of points among Big Ten teams from three. 22.7% of opponents' points are from three, and second most from two, 58.6%, which is kind of Brad Underwood's goal, right?
Yeah.
Force them to make twos, because we know the math that is involved there. But how do they do that? Like, because there were so many tough twos by Michigan State in that first half.
Yeah, we talk about the drop coverage defensively in ball screens, and that's what that is. That's what that breeds. It's forcing you into those pull-up twos. You got to think, if I'm a ball handler that's coming off a ball screen, I'm on the right wing, I'm coming off to my left. Kofi's retreating into the paint. They want to encourage that pull-up jump shot from 17 feet, a floater from 14 feet, whatever it is, to where you don't have to be in rotation. And the teams that don't guard like that, or maybe they zone, or maybe they 2-2-1 press in the full court, that's where you start seeing threes get shot because there's a lot of rotation, right? Like, let's switch the ball screen coverage. I'm coming off on the right wing with my left hand again. Coming off, they want a hard hedge. Okay, I'm doing two retreat dribbles back, right? And now, since I have that big pulled up with me on those retreat dribbles, now it's on these guards that are helping underneath the basket to protect the roll guy. And if you protect the roll guy and I throw back to my other guard who's shaping up from the corner, now you're in rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're giving up open threes. And that's why this particular drop coverage, as much as it can, it's not as aggressive, right? And I know at times you want to see Amar Payne or Kobe Coburn like blitz a ball screen.
Right.
But you got to realize what you're opening yourself up to. So you rely on, hey, they're going to have to beat us with 17 footers and 15 footers. And sometimes those shots fall. But if you can take away the threes, you're going to be in most games that you play.
Let's give a shout out to Benjamin Bossman's Verdonk, who over the last, you know, 3-4 games has really battled. I think that's just the best way to say it. It's not always pretty, but he battles. He makes things difficult for whether it's Zach Edey or Trevion Williams, or we saw, you know, Marcus Bingham's, you know, maturation as a player has been fun to watch too. And he was pretty good when he was in the game, but, you know, Bossman's Verdonk battled. And I thought Omar Payne, you know, especially offensively, given Illinois some things, they allowed you to compete, right? They allowed you to stay in that game. What stood out about them in that game? Because Omar Payne's kind of up and down right now, but Bossman's, I think the reason he's starting is just because you kind of know exactly what you're going to get from him, and it's been pretty solid lately.
You hit the nail on the head. You know exactly, come hell or high water, what you're getting with Bossman's Verdonk. And, you know, I made the point, I think I tweeted it during the game, that I think I said, hey, with that particular offensive personnel grouping, he's actually a really good fit out there. He screens, he can pass. And then I mentioned that he fights on the offensive glass. I had someone get in my comments and say he had one rebound. I said, I didn't say he gets offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
He fights, and that's all you want, because we talk about if you can occupy your guy, that's great. That maybe opens it up for another, you know, Damonte Williams, Jacob Branson to fly in and actually get the rebound. So you like that stuff. And I think they've shown, this team in particular, is, hey, if we have Kofi Coburn out, we have a guy that we can put in that is different than Kofi. There's no question about it, but still lets this team have certain advantages on the offensive and defensive end. For example, on the defensive end, Benjamin Bosnets-Radonk is better in transition defense than Kofi Coburn. He just is.
Yep.
And I think he's done a good job of really sticking with, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. I thought he's done an even better job over the past couple of games of finishing around the rim. You and I have talked about that all year, where it hasn't looked great at times, but he has gained a little bit more confidence, like anything in the world, right? You know, you get a little more confident doing it, then you'll see a little bit of a higher success rate. And yeah, you know, I think Kofi's going to come back into the fold here, but knowing that you have a Benjamin Bosnets-Radonk who can come in these moments, and him and Omar Payne are different players. Yeah. There's no question about it, but there's an advantage to that. You can use, you know, if Omar Payne was your sole backup and Kofi goes into foul trouble against a low post threat and you don't have a Benjamin Bosnets-Radonk, like, that's a problem. You know, now you're really having to shuffle around lineups, and maybe you throw Coleman Hawkins down there. Maybe you throw like Luke Goody down there on a post presence. And yeah, I think he's done such a good job of, like you said, doing what he does, doing it at a high level and sticking to that. Yeah. Right. Very rarely you're sitting there saying, all right, man, let's dial it back. He usually does what he does and he does it well. So credit to him and obviously credit to the staff for putting that trust in them to go out there and do those things.
The Luke Goody
From all accounts, he sounds like a guy that, from what I've heard, he just does all the right things.
Yeah.
In practice, outside of practice. I mean, that type of stuff, I mean, people can, you know, say that it's BS or whatever, but that type of stuff will always give you a leg up in the coach's eyes, without question.
You can tell everyone loves him. Like, you can tell the way they talk about him. They are so happy to see his success. And for Illinois, it's huge. We didn't know what he would be coming into this year. And, you know, he's kind of built as a skilled kind of guy who could be the four that they need. But he's turned into this kind of bruiser who just does things well. And, like, it's kind of the Damonte Williams of big men, in that it's kind of unnoticed most of the time, but it makes an impact on the game. Luke Goody got noticed. We've kind of been talking about, is he going to steal some minutes here from Damonte or Grandison, or, you know, who struggled here, or Coleman Hawkins, who struggled here the last four or so games. And boy, he stepped up in a big way. And you could tell why Tom Izzo wanted him. He just reminds me of a guy that Michigan State's had for years. And I think that's saying is positive of a thing as you can. What would you think of Luke Goody's kind of breakout there?
Yeah, he's been tremendous, even just in the spot minutes that he's gotten over the last few games. And he was playing closing minutes on the closing possession for Michigan State there, and actually got, you know, before Trent missed his free throw, Luke Goody's the one that got in there, stuck his nose in there, and got the rebound from the opposite side of the lane to go and grab it, to secure it. Maybe wish he would hold on to it, and be the one that got fouled. I know they weren't in the bonus yet, but, you know, like, he's so skilled, man, and he fights his tail off. And that combination, I think sometimes you see the guys that fight their tail off, you're like, yeah, they fight their tail off, and it makes up for their lack of skill in all these different areas. But he possesses those things, right? I mean, he has shown in big, big games that he can come in and knock down shots. Big time. He can come in and knock down shots.
You always talk about being shot ready. Like, I compare him to, like, I just don't think Grandison has been as shot ready or as confident lately. Luke Goody is. Like, I watch him as, like, Trent's probing, and he is just ready. His hands are up. His feet, you know, are a little bit wider than shoulder width. Like, he's a vet. He plays like a vet already.
He does. And I don't know what the Grandison thing – I thought Grandison's really shot ready earlier in the year. I'm not sure what has changed. And sometimes it's the January, February thing where you're just, I don't know, like, you're not as dialed into those things. And, but Goody just seems like he came out of the womb shot ready. So it which is great to see. And I think he's another guy that, look, the kid's 6'7". He's strong. He can move a little bit. I mean, that is, when you talk about guarding these fours in the Big Ten, I mean, that's a guy. You talk about Ty Rogers coming in, but he's another – Luke Goody's another guy that, as he gets stronger, as he gets even quicker – I mean, Fletch is the best in the business. So, you know, Luke Goody's only going to trend upward when it comes to strength and quickness and being able to guard those guys. So I'm excited to really see his progression. And I know Brad Underwood teased the 1,500 point scorer thing after the game, which I think you see all his other intangibles, and you hear a head coach say that, you're like, whoa. When you talk about 1,500 point scorer, I mean, that's nothing to scoff at. Yeah. That is big time. So I think he's the type of guy that, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan, if you're an Indiana fan, if you're a Purdue fan, Iowa fan, you're gonna be like, God, Luke Goody is still Illinois. He seems like he's gonna fit that mold for some reason.
Yeah, I don't agree with Brad. I don't think it'll be 1,500 because there's only been 13 players to do that. But 1,000, yeah, I could see that that easily, because I think next year he's gonna be a double digit scorer as a starter. I think he's gonna be that. And you know, that's a great thing. If Grandison moves on, you don't feel like you're missing very much if Luke Goody comes into the game. It got dicey, Mike. Last 6 minutes. Was Illinois running out the clock? Were they playing the clock game? And I hate that. Or was this just they couldn't run offense and weren't making good decisions?
Well, I mean, you know, Michigan State, I thought, did a really good job of taking away some of their initial actions. The thing with this Illinois team, at times when you have a certain personnel on the floor, it's always better off to just, hey, let's just keep it simple. Let's run some horns. Let's run some, you know, sideline ball screen stuff. And that's how we're going to keep it simple. The problem is, at the end of the game, when you're keeping it simple, it's really easy for teams to kind of get a beat on that stuff. And now, yeah, there is a little bit of the clock game. There is a little bit of, you know, about handing off and running the ball as opposed to just coming down. And I think it got to the point late in that second half where if I'm Alfonso Plummer, if I'm any of these other guys, I'm like, hey, if you got a good look, take it. Cause I think if you can make a shot, we can finally put this thing to bed. And that's why I just felt like it kept going on and on. And I also mentioned a lot of these late shot clock threes that were taken. A lot of them were by Trent Frazier, just, you know, 3-4 seconds on the shot clock. You got to get it up. Led to long rebounds and led to more transition opportunities for Michigan State. So, you know, I think it's stuff you take a look at and say, hey, when we get in these moments and we get into these slogs, I guess, where, you know, you can't get anything going. I actually thought Alfonso Plummer, it's funny, in the moment, you know, they just looked like back-to-back threes. Those two threes he hit in the second half, around the 9.5-10 minute mark, was the game.
Yes,
that was the game.
Yeah, and I got to give Alfonso a shout out. Like, he's 4 of 11, right? But he's 3 of 7 from three with those two huge, end up being clutch, even though they're midway through the second half.
Yeah,
but I thought his passing has been far better. Like, because teams are overplaying him, as they should, right? Like, run him off the 3-point line. He's a small guy. You can use length on him. Like, so teams are really focused on him, like more so than anybody in Illinois right now, because if he gets going, good luck. But he's making good decisions, got Payne a good touch, got I think that was for his and one, and then you know, he got Benjamin Bosman-Jordanc a good one, and with teams over focusing so much on him, I think he had one to Goody and one to Grandison too. So he's starting to make really good decisions with ball, and he doesn't turn it over all that often. So it's kind of been a new thing. I want him to shoot more threes than twos. I don't want him to fall in love with that. But his decision-making is kind of a league guard at times, has been better.
Well, I think the situations that they put him in, oftentimes, you know, they'll enter it to Omar Payne on kind of the extended elbow, and Omar Payne will go into a dribble handoff with Alfonso Plummer, and or you'll have Trent that'll, you know, dribble in front of Omar Payne and hand it off to Plummer, who comes off of Omar Payne. And that's really where they keep him. Like, hey, this is, you know, with your left hand coming off, like, this is where the situation will put you in. We're not gonna make you yo-yo with the basketball up to, like, that's just not his game. But he can do those in those little moments where he can come off and get, you know, one dribble, two dribbles off the ball screen, either get downhill, or like he's seeing now, these teams are blowing him up off these dribble handoffs, off these ball screens. So you take that one retreat dribble like you did in the second half, and it's the beauty of it, man. We talk about that middle third of the floor, where if he is screaming off that ball screen and can string it out into the middle third, if he picks it up like he does and jumps to pass it, those corners are not helping in. They can't help in as much. So now you have a big man that's, you know, screaming down the middle of the floor for a wide open layup, a wide open dunk, or if they do help in, skip pass to the corners or wings. So that's really been, it's great to see that evolution of his game and the way that these defenses are guarding him, because you can exploit that if you're Brad Underwood, and he will. I mean, that's what good coaches do. And I've always said, if you have a play at the end of the game, you probably draw it up for Alphonso Plummer, as much as you like these other pieces, but that's where you'll get the most reaction. Like, you know, you'll get the most help with a guy like Alphonso Plummer coming off the screen. So, yeah, man, he's been great. He's been solid. He hasn't turned it over as much, which is really what we were looking for in the beginning of the year. And he's taken that step, and credit to him.
What's that win that keeps you atop the Big Ten, puts you back on top of the Big Ten without two of your best, three players? What's that mean in a locker room? Because Trent says, like, hey, we treat every game like it's the same, but I don't think every win feels the same, right? Like, when you get that, what's that win mean for them? You know, as you hope you get Kofi back, you hope you get Andre back here soon. You have some time still where you can kind of get a rhythm if you need to heading into March. But what did Tuesday mean for that team?
Yeah, I think a lot of times Trent's right. I think you treat every game the same going into the game, but every game, it feels different after the game, for sure. Especially when a lot of people counted you out, you're down a lot of these star players, and you go out and do that. And it's you win a rock fight with Michigan State, who can be the king of rock fights at times. I think you look at the Big Ten standings, you look at Illinois sitting atop the Big Ten standings right now. I have a really hard time believing you can lose three in a row this year and win the Big Ten. I just do. I think that would be a really hard thing to overcome. So this win, it meant a ton. I think it shows that you can win without these two guys. One, it shows what you have in Trent Frazier, which not that anybody within the 217 up to 312-630. Like, right. no one doubted that. But yeah, I think it opened a lot of people's eyes where you start looking at him as not just he's a really good piece with Kofi and some of these. Like, no, he is a really good piece for any Big Ten team. He just is. And I think if you ask any Big Ten coach, they would give their right arm to have a Trent Frazier on their team who's just willing to do all those things and doesn't complain about it. So yeah, that win means a lot. And I think it's a win that when we get to late February, early March, you'll look back and however heated this Big Ten race is, you go back to that Tuesday night and you just say, hey, that's one they needed to have.
Mike, Northwestern has given so many teams a fight. They haven't been able to close those except for the win at East Lansing, which is huge for Illinois. But man, they just keep giving good teams really tough games and not knowing whether Kofi will be there. Like, they have some good big men. Like, Pete Nance is really skilled. Ryan Young, I enjoy watching just because he's so crafty around the basket. And then they got some guards who are really inefficient. Boo Booey and Chase Audige are inefficient, but they're talented and they can go off. So what do you think of this matchup with Kofi and Curbelo, maybe with one of them? And what would you think of the matchup without either of those two?
Well, think about the game in Evanston last year was probably the weirdest game that I can remember in the last 5 years or so.
Kind of gets lost in all those games, doesn't it?
Yeah, down 15, win by 30 or whatever it ended up being. It's just – or win by 25, I guess. Anytime you outscore a Big Ten opponent by 40 in the second half, I think that's what it ended up being, right? Yeah. It was 40, right?
Let me look that up. Yeah, I mean, it's nuts.
It's absolutely it's hard to do, obviously. And look, over there, they've had some wins this year. They beat Maryland, they beat Michigan State, and you mentioned it. I mean, they've been right there.
53-13 in the second half.
Yeah, 40 points. I mean, that's just.
It was 43-28. It was 43-28 at halftime. You're thinking 9-3 Illinois at that time. You're like, oh man, this team isn't very good. And boom, it was just nuts.
Yeah, I mean that was the Adam Miller second half too. He played well, and obviously Iowa. But yeah, this Northwestern team this year, it's amazing what taking care of the ball can do for a team that lacks, the talent, the star power that a lot of these Big Ten teams have. They're fourth in the country right now, taking care of the ball, with a 13% turnover rate, which is incredible. Yeah. And you're going to find yourself in games if you compete defensively, and you know they're shooting well enough for, hey, when you are taking, because I'm a big believer that, okay, great, you take care of the ball, but if you're putting the ball in the basket, then who cares? You know, shooting almost 36% from three for the year, which is good. I mean, that's top 100 in the country, and then when you mix that with taking care of the ball and kind of doing all these things that they do, it makes them a team that just is kind of like, hey man, like, go away. You know, why are you still alive? Like, we, you know, there's 4 minutes left and we're at the last media and you're still here. Like, you're still within shouting distance. You're down five, you're down six. And I don't think you can ever really feel comfortable with this Northwestern team. You know, and it may be another ugly game. Who knows? Illinois doesn't force turnovers and they don't turn it over. So I wouldn't really expect that to change this game. But with those two, with, you know, if you don't have Kofi, you know, then yeah, it's another big game for these big men to kind of guard out of their position a little bit with Pete Nance and with Ryan Young. Ryan Young's much more back to the basket, but they pose a it's a challenge. And then I'll mention with Audige and Bowie, you know, I know Bowie didn't really do much last year against Illinois, but I mean, you look at these other games, scoring 30, and Audige is scoring 30, and so like Maryland, this is a team that's they have good players. And good players, if you make them feel good about themselves early in the game, I'll always say it, all bets are off. So and you're traveling up to Evanston, and mm-hmm. should be a pretty pro Illinois crowd like it always is. But man, yeah, I'm not sure you can ever just chalk a win up when you go up there in Evanston.
Mike, next week we'll talk about a huge week with Wisconsin, Indiana, then Purdue after that. And that Purdue game moved up a little bit to Tuesday. So that's a heck of a run there of 10 days there, where we're going to find out a lot more about this Illinois team. But right now it's Illinois, it's 7-2, Michigan State and Wisconsin going into tonight, 6-2, Ohio State 5-2, Purdue 5-3, Indiana 6-4, Michigan making its run at 4-3. I think you were fortunate when you got them at home, especially without Hunter Dickinson. That's the top half of the league. Who you kind of buying stock in, and maybe who you selling right now? Hey, Mike, you're muted.
Go ahead. Sorry. I know Michigan's been on the uptick a little bit here. Can they do enough? I think that team just has a ceiling, in my opinion, of where they can finish in the Big Ten, and part of that's just the start that they got off to. It's going to be really hard to climb back into that. You know, I think Indiana is a team that, I mean, that's a tough place to play.
Can they do it on the road? Yeah.
They've been Jekyll and Hyde a little bit. So I don't really worry about them as a contender. I think Purdue, as we mentioned, I'll continue to buy a little bit of stock in Purdue just because I think every game they go into, they have the guys to do it. It's just a matter of, you know, how the game plan goes and who goes off for the other team and if they keep Sasha Stevanovich in check. And, you know, and I think Wisconsin, I mentioned them as my fifth Big Ten team, whatever, a couple of weeks ago when we did it. And I still feel that way. I think that they're not going to be on as much of a torrid stretch as they've had to start this Big Ten season, you know, and then I do like Michigan State. I think they're good. I think they had a terrible game against Illinois, and Illinois had a lot to do with that. But I do like their pieces as Christie and all those guys continue to get comfortable. And I think Tyson Walker and Hoggard are two really good point guards that push that pace. I think Ohio State's kind of been the team that no one really talks about because they just haven't been playing, you know, and I know they play again tonight. And so we'll see what happens in that game, but it's pretty open, right? I mean, like I don't think any of these teams are going to run away with it. I don't think any team's going to win the Big Ten by three, four games. That's not what's going to happen. This is going to come down in the last two, three games, I would imagine, in this Big Ten race, which is great because I think Illinois is likely going to be one of those teams.
Yeah, the one thing about Wisconsin, you mentioned it, the wins they've racked up early against Indiana, Purdue on the road, Iowa at home, even now Maryland on the road. That's when they got over Illinois, right?
Yeah.
Northwestern on the road, Ohio State at home. Their schedule really lightens up. Like, so if we're talking about the best teams, like, I still think Purdue going into March is the team that scares other teams in the tournament. Illinois, I think, has more talent than Wisconsin. We talk about Big Ten titles. Sometimes schedule comes into play, right?
Yeah.
And they still got Nebraska twice, Minnesota twice, Penn State, and Rutgers twice. Right? Like, so that,
yeah.
That's seven of their remaining 12 games that I don't see them losing, because Wisconsin doesn't usually lose those games. Might be close, but they just play so disciplined. So that's a team that won't surprise me if they have 15 wins at the end of it, just because
yeah. –
they take care of business, and what they've built up early is more impressive than what Illinois and Michigan State, to be honest with you, have done.
I think Wisconsin, and this is something that this year I was talking to a buddy of mine that coached there. They have like a different shake to them. I don't know what it is. It doesn't seem like the typical Wisconsin team, whether it's just the fact that Johnny Davis is their guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he has just an NBA pro style type game. You know, I don't think you see that as often with a Wisconsin team, especially out of Wisconsin guards, you know, over the last like 10 years. You know, so that's been interesting to see. And Chucky Hepburn's another guy that I think is solid and is a little bit different than what Wisconsin's had over the years. And then Brad Davison. I mean, I think everybody. I was sitting watching the Wisconsin-Ohio State game a few weeks back in my grandparents' living room. My grandpa walked in just out of nowhere and was like – and Brad Davis was on the ground, like, pumping his chest after taking a charge. And just unprompted, my grandpa was like, yeah, I just don't like that guy. you know, and it's just – you know, and I looked at him like, yeah, but why? And I get, like, there's a lot of reasons that people don't. But, you know, like, it's – he is that type of guy, right? He's the Wisconsin guy that I think people think of when they think of that team, but they're just, they have so many different elements and pieces. And I even think just their bigs with Crawl and Wall and, you know, they have really solid pieces. I mean, I was really shocked with that Wisconsin game or with the Purdue game when they went into Purdue. I was like, man, do they have the guys to go single coverage on Edie and Williams? And, you know, Crawl and those guys, they fought their butts off, and they do. So if you have the guys that can do that, more power to you. And I think that's another reason why, you know, I would almost put money on Purdue winning that game against Wisconsin in Madison. I think they'll split the, you know, their matchups. I'd be shocked if Wisconsin swept them.
Yeah.
But you're right, man. When you glance at that schedule, there's a lot of Nebraska. There's a lot of Penn State, you know, and Minnesota. So, yeah, I mean, obviously that's, you know, but those are the tough games, right? You know, when you have a lot of those types of games, those are actually the ones that if you lose them can kind of take the wind out of your sail a little bit. So it's, you know, the way that they've started, you probably want to have a lighter schedule coming down the home stretch, but – yeah, I mean they're going to be in as good a position as anybody here, rounding it off with the, you know, the ones that they have in the schedule here.
It's going to be an interesting finish. It's going to be an interesting finish, and Illinois certainly has put itself in that race, and right now at the front of it. That's why you got to take care of business at places like Northwestern. They still got Rutgers on the road, Penn State at home, but a lot of really good teams still left on that schedule. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch this because the atmosphere is, Mike, at State Farm Center. You were there a couple weeks ago. Like, man, it's been awesome. Like, I always want to remind myself what last year was, because
– I heard a lot about that game, that particularly the Michigan State. I was at the Michigan game, and I thought that was a fantastic atmosphere. I'm sure Purdue was the same, and I heard a lot about the Purdue one. But for some reason, this Michigan State one seemed like, by all accounts, was that the best one out of the three?
Man,
out of the two, I guess, with that and Purdue.
Maybe it was because I was so swept up in the game. Like, I thought Purdue and Arizona were higher level games, right?
Yeah.
And I think there was something about that Purdue game, but it's because the crush, man. Like the fact of where they are on the court now, closer to the court, And they just bring that atmosphere. I know the Michigan game, they weren't there. They just bring that different element. So I think when these national guys, like, you know, Goodman was there, Jeremy Wu was there, Benetti and Hummel, obviously, who are the best in the business. Like, yeah, it's different.
Right there. They're right there on them, right? I'm assuming those guys are sitting around where you're sitting with the on the press row.
Yeah. It's just a different – because, like, I don't think the acoustic of State Farm Center is as good as, like, Assembly Hall. Like, Assembly Hall is just two walls of people. The Indiana one, where it's two walls of people yelling at each other. I think it's similar to Breslin. Like, Breslin, with those students where they're at, gets insane. Like, what was your favorite atmosphere?
It was weird. When I got to Breslin – I was actually surprised, and sometimes maybe the camera angle throws you off. Like, if the camera's high enough, it looks like it's in this massive arena, but sometimes it's just at the top of the arena. Yeah. I thought Breslin was smaller than I thought it would be. I went in there, I'm like, actually, which lends itself to a loud arena. I went out to Oracle Arena to watch the Warriors a few years back, and it's the smallest arena in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Chase Center's not anymore, but Oracle was, and that was the loudest. That was the last arena I've ever been in, NBA arena. It was crazy. But Big Ten, you know, Ohio State's too big. You know, the shot's too big. It's too wide. So, they've had some good atmospheres in there. But, Indiana, for sure. Indiana, we played them the year that I was redshirting, my senior year. And I think they hit 19 threes. So that place got that place got pretty loud. I think they scored 103 points on us. So, I think Indiana's up there for sure, but for me, if I were to pick one, it's probably Mackey. Mackey's, I mean, and part of that, you mentioned the students. I mean, the students in Mackey are like where I was situated on the bench. They were on my shoulder. They were hanging over you almost. So that one, you know, Mackey especially, just in that arena, is just so tough to playing, and they're obviously always a really good team. And and then Wisconsin, I wouldn't say has like the best atmosphere, but it's, in my personal opinion, it's the toughest place to play. When I say the toughest place to play, it's just cold in there, man. Like, it's just freezing. And part of it is, you know, the hockey, and, you know, I understand that, but man, you'd go in there for shoot around and it felt like, oh my God, we played there almost all 4 years that I was at Illinois. And I think three of the four were 11 a.m. games. So you didn't get a shoot around. You had like a freezing cold practice the night before. And then you got up. And I remember my freshman year, it was a disaster. We lost by 30. And my team, my freshman year, was good. We went to the NCAA tournament. We were seventh seed. But you lose by 30. But when you backtrack, it was an 11 a.m. game. We wake up for 7 a.m., you know, shoot around. But we were going to do a walkthrough in this like ballroom almost. And something happened, scheduling, or something happened to where we didn't have the ballroom. And we were just scrambling around trying to figure it out. Then we go out there, and then we get murdered. And then our flight's delayed on the way back, and we're sitting in this small little airport for 7 hours. It was an absolute disaster. And that team was so good. I mean, Decker and Kaminsky, and that was a really good team. So sometimes, you know, the atmosphere is better when there's a crowd that has something to cheer for. Yeah. And typically that's a really good team that's typically on the floor. So so it ends up being the Purdue's, the Michigan State's, the Wisconsin's, but those are the ones over the years that but top, even going outside of the Big Ten Conference, was Gonzaga.
Oh yeah.
Gonzaga, the kennel was number one for sure. And then to go in there and get a win like we did was just, in the way Brandon played, I mean, it's just that'll always be, for me, like, when I look back at my Illinois career, man, that was a win.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely great stuff. Michael Tuup will do our film room, breaking down Illinois' improved defense from the Maryland game to the Michigan State game. But as always, man, love talking hoops, and thanks for the insight.
Appreciate it, man.
Follow Michael Tuup on Twitter at LaTuup_Mike. And we talk to him weekly here on the podcast. But if you are not a VIP member, I gave a pitch earlier in the podcast, 60% off a VIP membership. Part of that gets you the VIP film room breakdowns from both Michael Tuup and Jay Layman throughout the year. And I think they're worth the price of admission alone, especially for that first year where you're basically paying just a couple bucks a month. it's great. I learn something new every day. And I think if you talk to a friend that's a VIP member, they will tell you the same thing. So check that out. He breaks down defense this week. And I got to be honest with you, like the offense stuff we usually see, right? Most of us lay fans see the defensive stuff. I always learn something just because of where people need to be. And you don't really notice that stuff as much unless it's a block or a steal or, you know, single on single, one on one, a guy, you know, shuts somebody down. But it's the team defense stuff that Mike breaks down so well. So check that out at IlliniInquirer.com. It's going to be a busy weekend. Illinois football, of course, busy on the recruiting trail. They're starting to tweet out where they're going in state and all of that. Very smart. I mean, Brett Bielema gets the messaging thing. He gets the PR thing. It's not that other staffs didn't recruit in state. The staff recruits harder in state, and they've made a great effort. But the PR part of it, like he gets it. I can't say that enough. Like that's important. It's a huge part of a job of running a college football program is your outreach, your PR, your messaging, and Brett Bielema is great at it. It's great at it. Now, it doesn't matter if you're not winning games, but, you know, as you're building this thing, it's really smart of him to do. But, yeah, we'll be covering that. And, of course, Illinois basketball at Northwestern. As we're talking about with Tulip, you better show up for that game. You can't have Maryland. If you have the same kind of effort you had against Maryland, you're probably going to get beat. Northwestern is not beating many people, but they're giving a lot of people close games. As we saw against Michigan State, Illinois in some of those close games at the end, I mean, it can get dicey with their offense, especially if Kofi Coburn's not there. We don't know anything new on that. I don't expect Brad Underwood to tell us much on Friday, but we'll see. Appreciate listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. As always, give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. Everybody have a great weekend. Derek Piper and I will talk to you from Evanston over the weekend as well. And take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.